This is KZYX Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. We also stream live at kzyx.org, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. Support for KZYX comes from our members in the Tallman Hotel and Blue Wing Restaurant on Route 20 just east of Ukiah in Upper Lake. Effective in July, the Tallman Hotel is now open for travelers along Route 20 under strict new sanitary guidelines, and the Blue Wing is open for outdoor garden seating Fridays through Monday with brunch service Sundays. Further information is available at tallmanhotel.com. Support also comes from Gallery Bookshop at Main and Caston in Mendocino Village. Gallery Bookshop is open for online and phone orders Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 937-2665. They also offer curbside pickup and local delivery. More information at gallerybookshop.com. Now, KZYX is pleased to bring you a very special program, a presentation by Mendocino Latinx Alliance called Health Disparities, the Latinx Experience During COVID-19. Featuring Dr. Besant Parker, Dr. Mimi Duhan, George Verastigi, and Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaciola from UC Davis Center for Reducing Health Disparities. This is a follow-up event to the workshop the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors hosted regarding COVID and the disproportionate impact on Latinos and monolingual Spanish speakers in Mendocino County. It was recorded via Zoom on Friday, July 24th, and remarkably, it was presented in two channels, one in English and one simultaneously interpreted in Spanish. The following is an hour-long excerpt of the English language channel, but you can find audio of the full 90-minute event in both Spanish and English at our website, kzyx.org. Stay tuned now for the Mendocino Latinx Alliance.
All right. Welcome, everyone. My name is Roseanne Ibarra. I am the Director of Community and for Adventist Health Ukiah Valley, Howard Memorial, and Mendocino Coast Hospitals. I'm here today as co-founder of Mendocino Latinx Alliance, or MLA. Welcome. Thank you to Community Foundation for your sponsorship and for sharing your Zoom platform with MLA for today's webinar. We also thank our additional sponsors, Sonoma Clean Power and Mendocino College. Today's webinar could not be possible without the help of MLA Steering Committee member, Jose Cardenas Ortiz. He is a loan officer for Savings Bank of Mendocino County. Thank you, Jose, for your tremendous support researching how to do the interpretation piece here on Zoom. Thank you as well to steering committee members, Miguel Barber Allende, CEO of Community Foundation, Mendocino County, Angelica Millan, Managing Attorney for Legal Services of Northern California, Ukiah Office, Regional Office, and Erica Nunez-Reyes, Supervised Visitation Coordinator for Mendocino County Youth Project. And thank you as well to Healthy Mendocino and Molly Rosenthal, Coast Coordinator, for the technical support you're providing in the background. Today's webinar will be recorded and streamed on our Facebook so that it can be accessed later by the public. MLA is very pleased to share with you that on Tuesday, the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved to move forward on requests that Latinx leaders from across the county presented to create equity, diversity, and inclusion task force and to make more information available in Spanish. These eight groups of leaders included Ukiah Vecinos en Acción, La Coalición Latina de la Costa de Mendocino, South Coast Latino Coalition, Nuestra Alianza de Willits, Sueño Latino en Anderson Valley, Periódico Al Punto, Mendo Latino, and Mendocino Latinx Alliance. During the presentation, we heard powerful accounts from community members who illustrated the complexity of the Latinx experience and our challenges. One speaker shared what it was like to have her social bubble test positive for COVID-19. Another speaker shared frustration at the lack of information available in Spanish and the lack of response from agencies when calls are made. She went on to say, Latinos are not getting services because they don't know they exist. The joint Latinx leaders thank Mendocino County Board of Supervisors for their support and leadership in moving toward more inclusivity. Their action on Tuesday marks a historic moment for those of us impacted by disparities. Also, thank you to Chair Hashcheck, Dr. Duhan, and Health and Human Services Agency Director Tammy Moss Chandler for making the workshop possible. I now would like to welcome forward Supervisor John Hashcheck from our third district, who's also chair of the board. Supervisor Hascheck.
I'd like to thank everyone for being here today, and especially the leaders who helped make this possible. Thank you, Roseanne Ibarra, for your incredible work and your team, you know, because it is a team effort to get this all together. There's not enough time to go into everything, but the hope is that we can create a community that's safer and healthier for everyone with respect and dignity, and that everyone feels that they're a part of our community and that we're pulling together, and that obviously in this pandemic, we're all in it together and there's no one can be left behind. So anyway, thank you, and I hope we have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Hascheck. Our program today includes the following speakers: Dr. Noemi Duhan, Mendocino Public Health Officer; Dr. Basant Parker, Medical Officer for Adventist Health Ukiah Valley, Howard Memorial, and Mendocino Coast Hospitals; George Verestigi, Mendocino County Public Health Senior Program Manager of WIC and International Medical Graduate. Mr. Verestigi is also a member of the Mendocino Latinx Alliance Steering Committee; and Dr. Sergio Aguilar-Gaxiola, Founding Director of the UC Davis Center for Reducing Health Disparities. I'd like to invite forward Dr. Parker from Adventist Health.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be here on behalf of Adventist Health Mendocino County. It is certainly a difficult time for the nation, as well as for us in Mendocino County dealing with COVID-19. It is especially so unfortunate that it has tended to impact our brothers and sisters in the Latinx community much more than other communities in this county. We at Adventist Health are open arms to all to take care of patients who have COVID and patients who do not have COVID. Over the past several weeks, we've had the unfortunate opportunity to take care of some COVID patients, and we have done that to the best of our ability. We did here in Mendocino County, I did have the opportunity to prepare a bit more than perhaps other cities and counties where they had a sudden influx of COVID cases. Not influx, but such a sudden rise of COVID cases to the extent that it was difficult to control. We have been able to prepare before this increase in cases that we're seeing currently. I wanted to share a few things that are specific to the Latinx community, what we are doing that would be helpful to them. So as with most hospitals, we do have interpreter services and certainly do have Spanish interpreters, live interpreters in our hospitals for the most part. And we also have video and online interpreter services in all our three hospitals. We do also have signage in both English and Spanish so that people who are Spanish speaking would not be left out with regards to directions directives when they have gotten care from us. Is there more we can do? I think we all are thinking about that now and making sure that we leave no stone unturned in being able to help our brothers and sisters in the Latinx community. I thought it would be helpful to share a few details. So in Howard, we have 15 certified interpreters. In Ukiah, we have over 60, and we do have a couple on the coast. We try to, in our emergency areas such as OB and the ED, emergency department, we try to staff bilingual staff for most of the various shifts that we have. And if we do not have live staff that are bilingual, certainly do have the online video and phone interpretation services. I want to speak about a few other things with regards to testing and how the Latinx community can protect from the spread of COVID. As we all know, we have been mandated to have facial covering, not to gather, just to help decrease the spread and to socially distance. It is important that we do that. Masking is critical. In our facilities, we do not allow anyone coming in to not have a mask. You have to be masked. So to keep that in mind. So I think I will end by saying the hospital, the clinics are open arms to take care of everyone, COVID or non-COVID. No one should be afraid that when they come to us, you know, because we may have COVID patients in-house, that is that means that they're going to get the disease. We have properly trained folks who have been equipped with appropriate PPE, and we have ramped up new protocols to assure that infection prevention is top of the list. And so we are taking care of other non-COVID patients. We're doing surgery on non-COVID patients, and people are doing well. So one thing that we have seen is the acuity, the severity of illness of those coming to the emergency room has gone up. And it appears that people are staying home too long with diseases before they come to the emergency room. So I would ask that you do not stay at home with any disease you have. Call your doctor, come to the emergency room if need be, and we are open arms to help you. Thank you. I'll pause at this point, and if I don't know when there will be question time, but I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Dr. Doohan, welcome. I invite you forward to speak.
We have been doing outbreak and surveillance testing, and this has been a way that we have wanted to be of service to every person in our county. We've had 19 outbreak testing events, which is where we identify an outbreak, which would be three or more cases in one place. And then we stand up very rapidly outbreak testing, which we send to the public health lab in Sonoma and now at the Richmond lab, which is the state lab in Richmond, California. We've done 137 surveillance testing events. These are all done with our partner clinics, which are around our county and are really on the front line of our care for our Latinx population. Our community clinics are absolutely on the front line. And we also have the OptumServe resource that also provides surveillance testing. We also just secured a rapid point of care testing machine for the Mendocino Coast Clinic in Fort Bragg. And this is another way that we've supported our Latinx community because, of course, the FQHC clinics like MCC on the coast does serve so beautifully our Latinx population. We've had weekly calls with our clinic partners so that we may, for months now, so that we make sure that we are supporting our clinics who are supporting our Latinx populations. We've established a walk-in lane for those who wish to be tested at OptumServe, and that was particularly focused on our Latinx population who we got feedback were having a hard time with the sign-in online. And that was, again, because there was much focus on the English language. So we've had a number of media initiatives, and these have been, again, we do recognize focused in English language, but I did want to talk about those things that we've done that have been focusing on the Latinx community. Clearly it's not enough, but we have been trying. And so we've provided a dashboard on our website in Spanish. We've been having George, who's on this call, providing translation, interpretation during our Friday media updates for a segment of that. We have done some shows on KZYX for the Spanish language programming. We've also translated the health orders and educational materials into Spanish on our website. And we've been doing contact tracing and OptumServe testing PSAs in Spanish. But we also are working to develop a county web page dedicated to providing COVID-19 resources in Spanish. There are Spanish resources, there are Spanish language resources on our website, but they're not all in one place. You have to read through a lot of material to find them. So what we're going to do is make a location on that website where all of the Spanish language materials are all in one place. We are going to be doing a focus on our COVID-19 video updates in Spanish on Fridays. We're going to be also additionally using professional translation and interpretation services that came out of the excellent workshop we had on Tuesday. We heard this call and are moving on it rapidly to get professional interpretation and translation. We want to also develop more educational materials and social media posts in Spanish and additional educational videos. And importantly, we need the partnerships with the community so that we can make sure our Latinx community is getting from their Latinx leadership these materials. We need the help of our Latinx leaders to make sure these materials we develop are shared. So we do have next steps. We have case investigators and contact tracers who help with our outbreak follow-up. And we do need volunteers who are bilingual. We need help with distributing the educational infographics and flyers. We really need help from our Latinx leadership to get the message out to our community that we should not be having gatherings. I know this is very, very difficult, but when people come together for celebrations, this is where we're seeing a lot of spreading. When people come together for celebrations that are a normal part of our life, gatherings for birthday parties, for quinceañeras, for variety of very, very treasured social and cultural and worship events, it is how we're spreading the virus if we're not social distancing and wearing facial coverings. The governor has banned all gatherings at this time except for worship. We also, as I said, hiring a full-time translator, community partners to be our trusted advocates and ambassadors to the community. And then we're increasing our partnerships with our local clinics for case investigations and contact tracings. And the very first clinic that we solidified this partnership with was the Round Valley and Indian Health Center, with the outbreaks that we've been dealing with up in Round Valley in the Covelo area. So we work with our clinics, we meet weekly with them, and this is an area of increasing work together with our clinic partners. And I wanna share here some of the infographics and flyers that you can find on our website that we have been developing over time that live on our website, but we need more. We need to make sure that there are readily available flyers that people can put up in their stores and their homes or their churches, wherever they are, to remind us that we need to stay 6 feet apart. We need to wear facial coverings at all time in the public, unless for some reason we're disabled and we can't, or we're under the age of 2. We need to stay home when we're sick. We need to, to the extent possible, wash our hands. We need these messages to be spread throughout our county, because what we're seeing when we see outbreaks is people not wearing facial coverings, not staying 6 feet apart, not staying home when they're sick, and spreading the disease, in particular in gatherings. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Doohan. Thank you for this important information and for sharing the update on the progress that the county is making. We really do appreciate all of these efforts. And now if we have any questions for Dr. Doohan.
I have one question. Are there community business organizations that assist with the local clinics and testing information messaging?
Our messaging for our testing that we've done, which is surveillance testing, because the public health department is not providing medical care to people. We're working to prevent and mitigate slow the spread of COVID. So our testing, which has been focusing on surveillance testing and outbreak testing, the messaging for that has come through our community clinic partners primarily and through our public health department, through the public service announcements we make, the press releases we do, our Friday press conferences. But in particular, we have not had the business community partnering with us on that. But I will say that as we move forward into this pandemic, the state has indicated that they will not necessarily be continuing to fund testing indefinitely, and that we are going to have to find ways to fund testing locally, including perhaps from the business community. So this is an area for the future.
Dr. Doohan, there's a question about monolingual Spanish speakers and if that information can be added to the county's dashboard.
Ah, how many of our cases are monolingual Spanish speakers, and that would be added to our dashboard. If you thought that would be helpful, I mean, one of the things that we've been concerned about is stigmatization of our populations. And that's one of the reasons why we don't list all ethnicities on our dashboard, because there are some ethnicities that are, if we said, you know, an area of the county that's more of a remote area and we identified ethnicity, we might actually identify the individual, which we never want to do. We want to protect personal privacy, and we don't want to stigmatize. I would say I would look to this leadership, the Latinx leadership group, to give us advice on whether you think that would be something to publicly put out. But I will tell you that from our experience with the case investigation contact tracing we're doing, we're seeing quite a large percentage of our new cases being from the monolingual Spanish-speaking community.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Doohan. I see a question here that's for Dr. Parker. Can the hospital folks address the question of what information they send to HHS, since HHS oversees some immigration programs? Folks may want to learn more about whether any personal information might be shared.
Thank you. So personal information is not shared. What HHS is looking to be able to do with the information is basically to help with allocation of resources. What we send is more aggregate data. So how many COVID patients have we seen in our hospitals? What's the background? You know, is it Black? Is it Latino? Is it Caucasian? And so on. So the general health data, that does not include personal information. So I don't think anyone should be concerned that when they come to hospital to be cared for, should they be undocumented or what have you, that would be a problem. That certainly is not the purpose of the data that we share.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. And now I invite forward Mr. Verastigi. MLA has asked Mr. Verastigi to speak in Spanish to illustrate what it is like to have important information interpreted. Mr. Ibarra, our interpreter, will switch to the main channel here to interpret Mr. Verastigi's statements.
We are ready. Hello. Hello. I am ready to translate.
¿Ya puedo empezar?
Sí, adelante.
Okay, yo estaba esperando. Okay, gracias por la invitación.
Thank you for the invitation. For those that don't know me, I am a doctor graduate in Peru.
Tengo una maestría en
política. I have a master's in political health in Peru, a master's in business in Spain, Madrid, and I'm studying public health in the University of Spain. Actually, I'm a manager of programs in the nutrition program for kids and women that are pregnant or that are breastfeeding.
Okay, gracias. Bueno, entonces,
okay, thank you. Basically, my role here started, well, my role as to educate the Hispanic community outside of WIC, started with the pandemic, trying to get the information to the Hispanic community. Initially, I think the county did a good approach because the number of cases was low.
Transmitir
the way we deliver the information to the community
la mejor manera posible.
The best way.
But
the cases began to rise, and we just don't needed someone that to deliver this information firsthand, but we needed people that do the case investigations and the tracing. And now we're feeling the need. Unfortunately, Dr. Doohan has mentioned we're going to have the possibility to with the little army of bilingual staff that are going to help us, because we're very short of staff. A lot of times we have to be here weekends trying to do our work, doing the case investigations or the tracing of cases. This is working every day is very challenging and exhausting. I want to mention that I've been reflecting about this pandemic. Dr. Sergio is going to deliver these ideas better, but I do want to mention my point of view as a Hispanic worker in the front line and trying to educate our community here in Mendocino. I don't want to miss the opportunity to express how I see this, the situation in the country and in general, what's happening around the world. I think this pandemic is the pandemic of injustice. The coronavirus, what has done, has exposed the injustices that have already existed. It's not that the coronavirus brought the injustice. The injustice was there, and it's impacting hard the communities that have been neglected. In April of 2020, 36 million people have lost their jobs. 40% had an annual salary of 40,000. And 40% of the people that applied to unemployment are white, 17% Afro-American, 19% Latinos. Let's remember that only people can apply to non-employment people with documents. This number of 19% being the biggest till April 2020. This can be lower. So the people from the Latino community that have lost their jobs because of the pandemic can be almost 40% in all the country if we count those that are undocumented. It's not casual that all these expressions happened in Minneapolis with the assassination of George Floyd. It's not casual that the people are expressing their discontent. Because this injustice has been happening for decades, it's not. If we see a certificate, we can say that a person died from COVID-19. We, as medics, poverty, there's chronic sickness, there's a lack of access to health care, and there's racial injustice by people that haven't been into a clinic in the right time. So, with the logo COVID-19, what it's doing is to mask. We try to go a bit more deep with this dysfunction diagnostic. We are going to see deep. So what can we do? This meeting Tuesday, it was a big step. The Board of Supervisors have given us the opportunity to express our voice, and that we can collectively, and they've been receptive to get all these preoccupations, but we're just a part of the society. There are some other important actors in society in the county. For example, we have to see the way that we can better the access to healthcare of the people that don't have access to healthcare. We have to figure a way that we can guarantee the access. Second, we have to see the possibility to divert the workforce and the health department and the medic and nurse. We see, for example, the doctors that are working in the hospital or in the health system here, the Latinos are minimum. And if we further, future medics that are coming out of universities, there's not one Latino coming out of those programs. So we have to make sensitive some other institutions that are involved in the healthcare system so we can change, contribute to this fight of these injustices that we are watching. This kind of power to incorporate the minority groups as done by the Board of Supervisors, I think it's a big step. And finally, I think that we need to have a strategy, a whole strategy that we can get in the next year. How can we try to identify and solve the issues that are linked to the socially determinants of the health of the public, you know, and try to implement policies of equity and equality in the county, in the terms that to give more resources to who more needs them. Some of my thoughts that I wanted to share with the panel, and I'm open to questions. Thank you.
Okay, I now invite forward Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola. He is professor of clinical internal medicine for the School of Medicine at UC Davis. He is director of the community engagement program of the UC Davis Clinical Translational Science Center. He is past chair of the Board of National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI of California. He was recently appointed to a four-year term as member of the National Advisory Council of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA, Center for Mental Health Services. He is currently a member of the California Healthcare Foundation and a member of the California Department of Public Health Equity Advisory Committee. He is a national and international expert on health and mental health comorbidities on diverse populations, and is currently a member of the Executive Committee of the World Health Organization World Mental Health Survey Consortium, and is coordinator for Latin America, overseeing population-based national regional surveys in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, and Peru. Dr. Aguilar Gaxiola is the author of over 180 scientific publications, among many other accomplishments. It is my distinct honor to welcome forward Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxiola.
Thank you so much, Roxanne, for that kind of introduction. Y agradezco muchísimo la invitación. Yo soy mexicano, soy inmigrante también. De un pueblo del estado de Sinaloa, y me da mucho gusto tener la oportunidad de hablar con ustedes también y intercambiar ideas. Y estoy muy impresionado positivamente por el trabajo que está haciendo la comunidad en el condado de Mendocino y también la receptividad, pues, de las autoridades, ¿no? De los board supervisors, de la doctora Duhan. Estoy impresionado y me da mucho gusto de nuevo. Voy a regresar en inglés porque me dijeron que hablara en inglés. Lo que, what I'm hoping to do is to share with you some thoughts at the national level, at the state level here in California, and at the local level. What a difference sometimes a few weeks make. You know, this particular graph that I'm showing, it comes from the New York Times, and that had an impact. That particular article had an impact. And what it captures there is that Latino and African American residents are 3 times more likely or as likely to become infected by the coronavirus as white residents, and nearly twice as likely to die. Once again, this is at the national level. This is July 5th. And something that el doctor Verastagui mencionó, and I cannot agree more with him, is that this phenomenon that we are seeing, unprecedented numbers, unprecedented impact on all of us, all the population, is that this pointed to the pervasive social and structural inequities that are disproportionately burdening racial and ethnic minority groups. And this is with the coronavirus worst effects. So what the pandemic has done is to really shed us a light, a shining light on what existed before. Now, what we knew that has existed for decades, actually centuries, it is more pronounced than ever, I think. But one thing that is important to keep in mind is that because of that, there is a unique opportunity to also make changes, you know, radical structural changes. We have that opportunity. And when I'm going to speak a little bit more about that point. This is yesterday. Yeah, U.S. coronavirus tops 1,100 for a third day in a row. This is in California back in the 5th of this month. And as you can see there, you know, the Latinos are being affected in terms of the number of cases, number of deaths, and with the disproportionate numbers to the distribution of Latinos as in California. Same thing is happening with African Americans, you know. But that is July 5th, okay? And this is what's happening lately here in California. From COVID-19, you know, California passes 400,000 cases. This is moving fast, you know, really. And I want to instill in all of us a sense of urgency, because it's urgent. California has most COVID-19 cases in the U.S., surpassing New York. And now we know that L.A. has surpassed New York City in terms of the number of cases and deaths, you know. And you may remember the horror that many of us were observing, a few weeks ago in New York, of those trailers with, you know, freezers, basically, to store the bodies that they couldn't, you know, process soon enough, the funeral homes. So what we were seeing in California back in April 26, and by the way, that was the week that the state, through the Department of Public Health, they started to post this data, you know, the distribution of number of cases and number of deaths by race and ethnicity and by age groups as well, which is wonderful that they did that. I applaud those efforts. I think that we have learned a lot because of that. But look at the numbers then. You know, still, relative to the proportion of Latinos in the state, there were fewer deaths, okay? With African Americans was a different story, because with African Americans, there were disproportionately more number of deaths, you know, with respect to the proportion in the population. This is, if we consider the age group from 18 to 49, back in April 26, we were already seeing a disproportion of deaths in Latinos in relationship to this particular age group in the population, okay? This is what we were seeing with African Americans. Three times the numbers of deaths in African Americans, tremendous disproportion. It was actually alarming. I got an interview from the LA Times who broke the story, and it made the waves across the nation, trying to figure out why Blacks and Latinos were dying younger than the rest of the population. So this is as of 2 days ago, and these are ages 35 to 49. And look at these numbers. Do you know that out of 5 people who die in California, 4 are Latinos, basically? And of course, the questions are, why? What's happening with our communities of Latinos that, you know, you can see these dramatic numbers, significant numbers? One thing that I want to emphasize here is that there is a significant proportion of cases, both cases and deaths, that are, they don't have identified race and ethnicity. They don't, you know, it is about 30%. And I happen to believe that a good proportion of those are Latinos, okay? And many of them, I think, and we have discussed this with many colleagues, that maybe farm workers, maybe immigrants, maybe undocumented immigrants. So we need to consider these numbers because the situation may be even worse than the one that I'm presenting to you, okay? So a couple of weeks, there was this report from in the Sacramento Bee, a special report. Really, this was the front page in the Sacramento Bee about as cases surge, California struggles to slow COVID-19 in Latino communities. And I'm emphasizing there the quote that as California scrambles to respond, there is the question of whether officials should have noticed the surge in cases among Latinos sooner and acted more assertively. But there's a more pressing issue now. That's a more pressing issue now. And so all of you, you know, and all of us, in my opinion, are doing the right thing. I cannot tell you how heartening has been for me, Roseanne and all of the colleagues, you know, the chair of the Board of Supervisors. But you are doing the right thing. You are being proactive. And that's an incredible advantage, as I will emphasize a few, you know, a bit later. These are your numbers as of yesterday. You know, you have a wonderful dashboard. I have been bragging about you, by the way, because it's just terrific to see these numbers. I mean, to see the dashboard. And Dr. Duhan did a fantastic job, you know, presenting in much more detail what I'm presenting to you right now. So, but what I want to emphasize is that 59% of the cases are in Latinos as of yesterday, okay? One thing that I love to see also is that you have the dashboard in Spanish as well, okay? That's the one that I decided to highlight here because it's wonderful that you're having that. So what kind of sense can we make of those numbers? Well, basically you have a population of your almost 90,000 or about 90,000 people in Mendocino County, about 24, 25, 26, depending on how you count them, you know, are Latinos. So you have more than twice the proportion in the population of Latino cases, okay? So you are doing the right thing because that's one of the groups, certainly the group to focus your efforts on. This is the essential workers that are being infected the most by COVID-19. Number one, farm workers. And you have farm workers there. And it's still so important that you understand the dynamics that happen with farm workers. I wish to have more time to engage in discussions because I think that those dynamics, you know, the attitudes, the behaviors, the beliefs, the lack of knowledge play a very important role of how this is playing out, okay? And these are things that are so important that you keep in mind because you are still in a unique opportunity to get ahead of the curve with this. Then I want to share, a resource, a paper that came up a week ago exactly. This is the CDC Preventing Chronic Disease. It is engaging with communities, lessons relearned from COVID-19, because we are relearning this. This is not new. You know, there has been disparities with many of the outbreaks, previous outbreaks. We learned that in AIDS, SARS, and we are relearning as we respond to COVID-19, that the health equity begins with communities. We really have to work with you know, on the ground, at the community level, in order to make a dent to this, pandemic. But the direct barriers, you know, I know that you know this as already. Ineffective communication about COVID-19, in Spanish, in easy ways to understand misinformation about COVID-19. Dr. Duhan did a fantastic job about that with very good infographics that she presented. Also concerns about the safety, you already spoke about that, limited access to the testing, which is absolutely necessary, important. I was heartened to hear that, there is an Abbott machine that was purchased and that is going to be put in operation shortly. It's needed because otherwise we would be working in the, shooting in the dark. I should have used another metaphor. I don't want to be, shooting is not going well with me, let me tell you. But, you know, fears also, we need to know what the fears of these populations are related to testing. I have heard on many occasions, talking with leaders of farm workers, that there are farm workers that they prefer to go and work even though they know that they are feeling sick because they cannot afford losing a day's salary, okay? It is as simple as that. This is information that we need to consider because if we don't, we will continue to see these challenges. A stigma, Dr. George Verastagi mentioned that already, you know, et cetera. So what we can do, you know, just a few pointers. And I was really glad to see that Dr. Duhan shared very specific information in a short period of time since the Board of Supervisors meeting that happened on Tuesday. And I don't have anything but praise for you, Roseanne, and for the other community members that came together in a very proactive manner. And bravo to the Board of Supervisors, you know, and the health officials, because you are responding to this call in a community that is rightly concerned about doing something and be ahead of the problems before they can get worse. So what can you do? Engagement with communities at the local level early and throughout is critical. You already know that because you are doing it. gathered timely data on those affected. I was impressed with the information that Dr. Duhan presented already. Meaningful engagement, partnerships, and trust of communities. Engaged communities as partners in addressing what matters to them. This is a time for people like me to listen, you know, not to impose our ideas, but to really listen to the experts on the ground. You know, I would consider as experts the farm workers, as you know, those who are being infected, those that we need in order to control, you know, what is happening on the ground. Case investigation, contact tracing is absolutely important, and you are still in really good time to do this in a serious manner. And in contact tracing, there are several pointers. Moving very fast is crucial. Thoroughness, accuracy is crucial. Persuasive communication that you are onto it. I'm impressed that you have a simultaneous interpretation in this Zoom session. You know, I have been in many Zoom sessions. This is the first time that I had been in a Zoom session in which I see the globe, you know, that you can touch. And then you have, you can select Spanish or English or other languages. So you are ahead of the game in several things. Isolation and you know, which is also very important. One thing that I want to emphasize here is that, you know, the last point, built on existing relationships, la confianza que existe ya, y poder trabajar sobre eso. To enhance case investigation, contact tracing. And I listed, Roseanne, all the partners that you listed on Tuesday, you know, and many of whom representatives that participated last Tuesday. Long-term implications. I think that it's about time that we reframe COVID-19 pandemic as a community problem, not a public health problem. It is more than that. And there are many reasons for that. To focus on outcomes, not on activities or processes, you know, and to look at reliable and actionable indicators. As Dr. Thomas Frieden, the ex-director of the CDC, you know, mentioned in a wonderful op-ed that he published, I think that in the Washington Post. And then the last point is COVID-19 is a paradigm case of an illness where social determinants of health play the leading role in the transmission and outcomes. You made a wonderful point, Dr. Berastegui, about that. I was so pleased that you brought that up because I think that is absolutely true. And what I want to also emphasize, one of my last points, is that it is about time that we go from just providing knowledge, you know, educating the population at the general level, to move to beliefs, attitudes, changes in aspirations, and change in behavior. You know, that is one of the major challenges that we have. How do we change behavior? You know, it was Dr. Frieden in a tweet that I saw that he said, all we have to remember is the three W's, you know, watch your distance, wear your mask, and wash your hands. Three W's, simple to remember. And if we do that collectively, I'm totally convinced that we can control the incredible surge that we are seeing right now. This is the last one. We need to speak about mental health, the impact that this is causing on all of us, especially those who are, you know, much more that live in circumstances that are much more challenging. You know, those who have to go and work, they don't have any other choice, that they can be infected and be back and infect their wife or their husband, and certainly their children. Their parents, you know, who are most likely in a vulnerable age like I am. And so this is I'm going to leave you with this. One thing that is certain about the current pandemic is that we are not doing enough to address its mental health effects. Usually, the damage a disaster does to mental health ends up costing more than the damage it does to physical health, because it lingers for years, you know? And I think that this is gonna be the case. And the allocation of resources for this other crisis, and I would call it the mental health crisis, the resources are yet not there. So I'm gonna stop here, and I wanna thank all of you for this opportunity to share some thoughts. And also, once again, to applaud your efforts, because you are coming together as a community still with the numbers that you have, and that I'm convinced that you will be able to do quite a bit.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Aguilar-Gaxiola, for your informative presentation. And now, do we have any questions from our participants?
I have one in English. What can be done to protect those who are undocumented and need health care or other services?
That's a wonderful question. And you know, I think that all of us are blessed to be in California. And because I travel quite a bit because of the work that I do. And I think that California is at the forefront in the nation to recognize the value and you know, the contributions of undocumented workers. Those are essential workers. I already show you know, those who are being infected. And top of the list is the farm workers. A good proportion of farm workers are undocumented. And the governor announced a few days ago, actually a few weeks ago, that California is setting aside $125 million, $130 million, 80 of which are coming from the state of California, and 50 from foundations for undocumented. Okay, is that enough? I don't think so. That is enough, but at least there is. I can see that you know, statewide, and it varies by counties. But most of the counties that I mean, the greatest majority are being very responsive to that and trying to protect those workers again. Because I saw a proclamation a few weeks ago from the governor's office, you know, recognizing the incredible participation and contributions that farm workers and, you know, including undocumented, do for our society. I gave a talk yesterday about the DACA, the upholding the DACA program by the Supreme Court in June 18th specifically. And you know, there are 200,000 of the 800 DACA students in the nation. 200,000 are here in California, and you know, there are 29,000 of the DACA program, you know, these are undocumented who are frontline health workers, and 9,000 are here in California. And some of them have died because they care for the rest of the population. So I would say in Mendocino County, take care of them, you know? We should be taking care of them because they are having a role in our society with significant contributions.
Roseanne, there was one final question that I think it's just important to bring forth, which has to do with what benefits to support isolation, quarantine, testing, and treatment related to COVID-19, related conditions, can immigrants seek without triggering a public charge problem? I do know the county is addressing that need. They're partnering with the Community Foundation, actually, in order to get food to folks that are in isolation. But I don't know if Dr. Duhan or Angelica wants to say anything regarding the public charge problem.
Certainly, the public charge is very concerning, but this has not come up for us with any of the people that we provided free isolation quarantine housing to. It's not been anything we've reported to anybody. So I'm not sure how that would come into play.
Thank you for mentioning that as we end.
Well, thank you so very much, Dr. Aguilar-Gaxiola, Dr. Noemi Duhan, Dr. Parker, and George Berastruhi. Thank you so very much for today. I do want to mention, we have a few more minutes. There's the Healthy Mendocino website. There's a document that is new on the page here that I wanted to direct our attendees to. It's the listening tour. It's a report out on what was heard. This is in relation to our community health needs assessment that's done every 3 years. You can find the report here at healthymendocino.org. But I'm bringing this up in particular because there is information here on interviews that were done with our Native American community regarding challenges, barriers, and recommendations on solutions, and then also for our Hispanic community and our coastal community. So I invite you to take a look at this informative document. And I thank all of you. I appreciate you participating today and standing by as we work through our first go here at doing a simultaneous English and Spanish Zoom presentation. So thank you so very much. Have a wonderful weekend.
You have just heard a presentation by the Mendocino Latinx Alliance called Health Disparities, the Latinx Experience During COVID-19, recorded via Zoom on Friday, July 24th. The original workshop was presented in two channels, one in English and one simultaneously interpreted into Spanish. You can find audio of the full 90-minute event in both Spanish and English at our website, kzyx.org.